So tonight we're going to look at the third foundation of mindfulness. Remember, the first foundation was mindfulness of body. The second foundation we talked about last week was mindfulness of Veda, feeling tone. Now this is the third foundation, which is mindfulness of mental formations. And first of all, I want to talk about the word mental formations. Mental formations is it's trying to make sure that you understand that this is broader than thoughts. You know, sometimes you see this called mindfulness of thinking, but there's lots of other things that go on at the level of mind that aren't what we would normally think of as thinking. And so we use this term mental formations to sort of take in moods and emotions and all kinds of other things that are all from the mental plane. So I'm going to start by reading a bit of the sutta. This is and how, monks, does he, in regard to the mind, abide contemplating the mind? Here he knows a lustful mind to be lustful, and a mind without lust to be without lust. He knows an angry mind to be angry, and a mind without anger to be without anger. He knows a deluded mind to be deluded, and a mind without delusion to be without delusion. He knows a contracted mind to be contracted, and a distracted mind to be distracted. That's the first half of this section, and I'll talk about the second half in a while. So, the Buddha starts off by talking about the three primary reactive mental formations that arise directly from whatever the Vedana of something that occurs was. You know, so if something is pleasant, then we lust after it. We want it. We want more of it. If it's unpleasant, then we have anger. We don't like that. We want to push it away, aversion. And if it's neutral, delusion. We just sort of space out. This is known as the three poisons. These are the three main ways we create our own suffering and the suffering of others. By being caught in reactive mind patterns that lead us towards one of these three mental formations. And these are broad terms, and we'll talk in more detail about some of them later on, next week, in fact, in some cases. So the key thing here, however, well, there's two things. One is that we can be mindful that that's what's actually happening. That's what he's pointing to. It's not like he's saying, oh, you're so bad because your mind's full of lust, or so full of anger, or so full of, you're so deluded. It's like, oh, this is what's arisen. Can you just be mindful of it and not be reactive? Can you just tune into it and go, oh, okay, that's what's here now, and not get caught up in having to do something about it or fix it? It's just acknowledge it, be aware of it. Can you actually be mindful of that's what's happening in your mind right now? So that's one important thing. And the other thing is, notice that in all three cases, he says, you know, if your mind is, know that your mind is lustful, then know that. But he also says, know that your mind isn't lustful. Know that the wholesomeness of not being caught in lust, not being caught by the three poisons. Note the wholesome energy of those experiences. Extremely important. Because otherwise, we just spend all our time sort of looking at all, oh, no, I've got that one. Oh, no, that one's here. And we end up just sort of turning this into, you know, this sort of very spiritual, holy way to beat ourselves up. which is not skillful. In fact, it's quite harmful. And it's, we have to be aware of that. And so we have to see that we, it's equally important to see when these things aren't there as when they are. The problem is, it's pretty obvious when they're there. When they're there, we know, right? But the not there part, how do we work with that? And the way to work with that in practice, if you want to work skillfully in practice with this, is you'll be, if you can be aware that you're caught, and you can sort of be caught in the energy of one of these three, and it's, you notice it, and you notice the unpleasantness of it typically, and you notice, you know, how the body's reacting, and then because all of these things are things that arise, are there for a while, and then they're gone, it'll be gone. And when it's gone, then whatever you were caught in, whether you were caught in some angry rant, and then the angry rant is over and it's gone, then it's like, that's when you have a good chance to see, oh, no anger. No anger's like this. Calm, still, pleasant. It's a different energy. And it's really important, and that's the easiest way in practice, is when you're in caught, if you can be mindful of noticing when it stops. Because it always is going to stop. So if we can be mindful of when it's stopping, then we can start to see the wholesome. And this is, it's really important that we learn how to do this somehow. The problem with all three of these mind, unwholesome mind states, lust, anger, and delusion, is we very quickly start from just bare noticing to some story about them. Whatever it was that's arisen, we now turn it into a story that we're telling ourselves. And that story always creates a sense of separate self. This is what happened to me. Or this is what I did to them. Or wouldn't it be great if, you know, I was on that rocket going to the moon right now. Or, you know, the mind just goes to all these places just like that, right? Delusion, anger, lust, whatever. And we start, as soon as we start the process of identifying with the energy of them as opposed to just noticing them, we turn them into stories that we're telling ourselves. And those stories always, always star me. The, you know, the villain, the hero, the great lover, the total jerk, whatever, you know, they're like mind movies, and we're always the star. And we often then, if when we notice that's happening, if we're not careful, we switch to self-blame. Oh, there I am, being caught in blah, 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 again, whatever the form of blah, your favorite blah, blah, blah form. And we start, now we're, not only do we have a self, but now we're blaming that self for being so bad, multiplying the problem. Right? But if we can see that, sure enough, it's there, and then it's gone, and we see the stillness and calm, we see that, you know, I'm not full of lust all the time, which is the story we tell ourselves. It's like, oh, lust arises and then it goes away. And then it's nice and calm. And we see that. And it just shifts our relationship to what's arising in the mind to one that's more like curious observing as opposed to identifying with. So So what I'm saying in some sense is, once we can start to notice these things, once we start to see them as they arise, or as we notice that they're there, we're starting to learn to be non-reactive, to not get caught by the energy that leads into storytelling and creating a sense of separate self in the process. We're just going, oh, that's there. That's okay. Because it is. That's the hard part, is to get to the point where you know it's totally okay to have your mind roiling with anger. Because, you know, anger is supposed to be like, it's bad. Oh, I'm so bad. You know, no, it's just anger. That's what's there. Yeah. Or whatever, you know, whatever's going on. We turn it into, not only I, but I'm bad. Which just gets in the way of any chance of connecting to wholesome. Because I'm bad. How could I don't deserve any of that wholesome stuff. I'm a bad person. This is what our mind does. It's just... And the problem with this is that if we don't see these things at all, if we're just like caught in reactive mode at the level of mind, what often happens is we go from level of mind to level of speech to level of action. We're now acting out these stories. You know, that person was bad and I got to let them know right away, and, you know, we're going to have a big fight. You know? Poof, just like that. Now you're causing not only more suffering for yourself, but more suffering for others. Just like that. Because we're being reactive as opposed to going, it's just what is. It's okay. And it's really wholesome. And the easiest way to see the second half of these things is, and I want to emphasize this, is if we're caught in one of these, which we're going to be. I mean, we're human beings. We'll get caught in them all the time. If we can notice, if we can note that, because these are things we can note, just like we can note something subtle like Vedana, or like our nose is itchy. Is this something that's arisen that we can note? Then there's a good chance we can see them end and see the wholesomeness that arises when they end. And this leads to encouragement about practice, because we start to see that it isn't all just junk up there. There's a lot of wholesomeness as well. There are wholesome mind states that arise all the time if we just pay attention. I want to read something that Joseph Goldstein has to say. This is from his book, Mindfulness. And he's talking about this idea of noticing and noting the three poisons arising, and how important, how we work with that is important. By emphasizing the recognition and knowing of the unwholesome roots and the wholesome ones in their absence, the Buddha is highlighting the wise discernment of what is skillful and what is unskillful. That is, discerning what leads to happiness and liberation and what leads to suffering. So we're starting to actually see clearly that the wholesome mind states lead onwards to more wholesome mind states more often, and vice versa. Because we see that the wholesome mind states are skillful, and unwholesome ones are unskillful, because they lead to suffering. But then he goes on. Although this discernment is basic to the Buddha's teachings, in our Western culture it's a very delicate process. For many people, it's an easy step from recognizing a particular mind state like greed or hatred as being unwholesome to the feeling you're a bad person for having it. That, or that somehow it's wrong for that mind state to even arise. It's like we get to this space where we think, Oh, I'm a serious Buddhist practitioner. I should never experience anger arising in my mind. Sorry. Ain't gonna happen. It's unrealistic. This pattern of reaction simply leads to more self-judgment, more aversion, and more suffering. It's not a helpful cycle. It's important to understand which mind states are skillful and which are unskillful, not in order to judge ourselves or to be reactive to them, but in order to see what leads to happiness and should be cultivated in our lives, and which leads to suffering and should be abandoned. The distinction between wholesome and unwholesome mind states brings a moral dimension into psychology. This is particularly important because these different states are not only arising in our minds, but they also motivate our actions. So what he's pointing to here is seeing these things clearly also leads to, oh, I don't need to go there. And that's wholesome effort, you know, the sixth step on the Eightfold Path. Like, here we are. Now this is where we actually apply effort and go, I can see that repeatedly telling me that same old story where I rant just wears me down and doesn't do me any good. In fact, it does harm. And so I can start seeing that it's skillful to let go of those stories and to, at the same time, oh, this is a story, or this is like a mind state or a mental formation that seems to be very calming and focusing, and I can concentrate more clearly, I'll be more mindful moment to moment. Oh, this is a wholesome mind state. I should cultivate this as much as I can. And we start to sort of steer ourselves a little bit in our practice. Okay. Of course, my notes here says, this sounds easy. But of course it isn't. Because for all or most of our life, we've been identifying with these defilements. They're how we define ourselves, how we think of ourselves. I'm the person who always gets angry. I'm the person who's just full of craving and wanting things all the time. Or I'm such a space case. I'm delusional, right? And yes, people have personality tendencies that sort of tend in all of those directions. But it's not you. It's just what's arising that you're identifying with as you. You create a sense of a self and an identity based on these repetitive stories you tell yourself over and over and over. Then what I haven't mentioned is after the three poisons, the next bit of the sutta, he says, he knows a contracted mind to be contracted and a distracted mind to be distracted. What's this about? Contracted means a lack of energy. You know, we can't, you know, have you ever been practicing and you're just like, boy, if I can actually note both the inhale and the exhale before I space out. That's a contracted mind. You're having trouble connecting. You just can't tune in at all. It's a sort of a sense of collapsing mentally, is one way I've seen it described. So it's like sluggish. It's, you know, dull. Distracted sort of means the mind is jumping all over the place. It's sort of the opposite. A lack of focused concentration. So there's lots of energy, and a distracted mind can seem very energetic, but it doesn't land. You can't focus it and make it land and actually note something clearly, and then stay with that thing you just noted for 3 or 4 seconds before you note again. It's just flying all over the place. So one is sort of passive and one is more overactive. And somehow we need to find a balance between those two. And sometimes those can be very skillful notes when you see, you know, when you can sort of step back from the moment to momentness of what's happening and in a broader sense go, I haven't noted anything clearly for the last 3 minutes. Huh. Am I, you know, and then say, am I, you can sort of see, are you contracted? Are you sort of just like sort of being slothful and not paying any attention to anything and just sort of blah? Or are you just like over-amped? And then you can start to choose again. Oh, if I'm this sort of like in that sort of contracted mind state where I can't connect, now is the time to put more effort in. I have to sort of consciously go, and maybe I even have to sort of restart my whole sitting practice at that moment, like, because we're always starting to get anyway, but like start, like go back all the way to like setting a firm intention to pay attention, to not just space out. So you can sort of step back a little bit and go, oh, okay, time to pay attention. And depending on how distracted or contracted you are, you might have to do this several times. But it's like seeing it clearly gives us a chance to sort of hit the reset button. Okay. It's not useful, not skillful just to sit here being caught in either one of these, either slothful or overactive mind states. I'm not being able to note precisely and clearly. My mind isn't still at all. It's just either sort of like clouded over or jumping around like a jumpy bee. Once again, you can see what's skillful and what's not. And it's consciously then do something to sort of direct towards the more skillful. If your mind is really distracted, if it's really jumping around, you might do that reset I talked about, but reset and go, okay, instead of having this sort of open awareness of everything, let's go back to just mindfulness of breath. Let's just do something really simple and see if I can sort of get my mind to settle and be a little concentrated. So once again, you've steered your practice a little bit in a particular direction because it made sense at that moment. So this is where the skill of practice becomes more and more obvious, where we have to skillfully choose sometimes to shift what's going on. We can't change what's arriving at the level of mind or for that matter to the level of body. We can't change that flood of stuff that's happening all the time. But we can change how we're directing our energy towards paying attention to it. If we can see that we're contracted or distracted, this allows us to start making those skillful changes. Another interesting thing, I think, and this is like I mentioned this earlier when I talked about mental formations. Another word that you might almost use for all of these things that I've talked about so far is these are like moods. You know, sometimes you sort of go, oh, I'm in that sort of mood. And that might be a good note almost. I'm in that mood, that, you know, my favorite moody space that I get into sometimes if I'm not careful. Another thing that's I found really helpful sometimes when I can sort of see that I'm caught in something, that's all I know. It's like, you know, Joseph Goldstein talks about that sometimes his only note could be chaos. Just chaos. That's all he could note. But it's also, I think, at that point when we feel like there's just something going on here, and I don't even know what's going on, but it's like just like I'm not fine-tuned in any sense of the word. It's to stop and sort of drop a little question into your mind. What's happening? What's up now? What's going on? Pick your favorite vernacular, right? And it's not like you're expecting a precise explanatory answer to that question. But just pausing long enough to ask that question, to drop that thought into the stream, sometimes allows you to sort of, once again, step back just far enough, because you, to ask the question, you have to step back to sort of, there's some clarity. Oh, that's what's going on. And it doesn't always work. But it's like sometimes it can be a very skillful thing to do. Another skillful means is to sort of pause and step back and ask, because you feel at some level that things aren't right, whatever that means. It's chaos. What's going on? Just stopping and asking yourself that question, and let it sit. Without looking for an answer. I'm not like, well, I want a magic answer to that question. But just the process of asking the question and then pausing and just taking a few breaths. And sometimes something happens. And sometimes it's like, I don't know. And sometimes we're back to noting chaos, and that's what we got. And even that's okay, because at least we're aware that it's chaos. If I can note, all I can note is the fact that chaos has arisen. It's better than not noting it and being caught in the chaos and whirled around. Subtle, but yeah. So then there's the second part of this section. And this is still a mindfulness of mental formations. She knows a great mind to be great and a narrow mind to be narrow. He knows a surpassable mind to be surpassable and an unsurpassable mind to be unsurpassable. He knows a concentrated mind to be concentrated and an unconcentrated mind to be unconcentrated. He knows a liberated mind to be liberated and an unliberated mind to be unliberated. Notice once again, it's both. The what I'll call the wholesome and the less wholesome, or the precise and less precise, perhaps. What he's talking about here, and I don't want to go into a great detail about this, is there are, in the process of this practice, as we have sort of basic level of mindfulness and concentration functioning, certain levels, deeper levels of concentration arise. And these are what the words he's using here, unsurpassable, great, concentrated, liberated. These are all layers of concentration, in a sense. Deeper and deeper layers of concentration that can arise. Excuse me. And what's interesting is, and what he's saying very clearly, is you can know that. You can know that the concentration has gone to this deeper place. And even if all you're noting is concentrated, which is concentration being a very wholesome mind state, now you're noticing something wholesome. And then if you notice that, that like there's layers of this concentrated mind where you become extremely still, and your breath becomes almost unnoticeable in one layer. Your body, your sense of body actually can disappear, where you don't have any connection to physical senses at all. It becomes a purely mental awareness of what's arising at the level of mind. And the body just falls away in terms of what you perceive. So these are all layers of concentration. But you can notice these things and note them and notice their passing. Just like you can note anger and delusion. You can note these really wholesome things that arise and be aware of them and pay attention to them. And see that, oh, this is what's happening now. It's and this is skillful because it encourages you. Start to see where this practice goes, where it's headed. And it's not like, oh, aren't I great because I was unsurpassable? We don't want to go there. You know, that just causes more problems. But it's like noticing that that's what's actually happening sometimes. No, even if it's like for 5 seconds, you notice, oh, concentration is really, you know, that you can feel, see, experience concentration as being what's predominant. It's a thing that shouldn't be noted because that's what's predominant right now. And it might just last for 5 seconds, then the next time you note your nose issues, and that's what's predominant. But it might be because you note it and you tune into it, it tends to continue a little longer. And you start to have longer and longer periods of focus and concentration over long periods of time. That's really all I want to say about these things. It's like, it's something that we have to understand, that this is where this practice is taking us in terms of what's happening at the level of mind. What's happening at the level of mind is sometimes these very pure, calm, still, focused experiences. And we should enjoy them without sort of getting all excited. Like, oh my God, I made it to that point. You know, tell yourself stories about it. But be aware of them. Be aware of the pleasantness of them. It's okay to enjoy them, but don't expect them, and don't make these calm, beautiful mental states become why you practice. Because then, you know, you're practicing for something. Now you're caught in total greed. But you know, because it's such a wonderful, holy thing, it's okay. That's just greed in, you know, in another form. So we have to be aware that that's a possibility as well. You know, as the mind gets more concentrated and calmer, and we start to experience and know and can note these more focused, still mind states, it's kind of exciting, but it's also kind of dangerous because we want them, and now we start practicing to make that happen again, like last week when I was sitting, or 20 minutes ago when I was sitting for that. These are just things that arise, just like everything else. They arise, they're there for a while, and they'll be gone. Over time, they'll arise more often. That's okay. I'll have to check my notes now. In last week, I talked, no, 2 weeks ago, I talked about the refrain. And just like in all other sections of this of the sutta, the refrain occurs after that. And one section is about internally and externally. So you can see these things arising internally, you can also see them arising externally, or you can see them arising both internally and externally. So if you can start to see them arising externally in other people's minds, if you can be mindful of that, it can be extremely useful in real world communication. You know, because you can see that someone's caught in one of these perhaps unwholesome mind states, and you'll know really clearly, oh, maybe not a time to sort of have a long, serious discussion about something with them right now. Or, and it's also not time to sort of tell them how bad they are to be that way. Or tell them, you know, hey, get it together and quit being so angry. Doesn't do any good. It's just causing more suffering. But you have to be able to see that really clearly. And the other part of that is when you start to see that everyone is subject to the unwholesome as well as the wholesome, it's something that makes us see that everyone's just a human being going through whatever they're going through. And it's like, oh, that sense of separateness we have, that sense of them being that weird way, but I'm never like that. You know, we start to see that we're all just human beings if we can tune into that level of energetic mental process that they're going through. It allows us to communicate more skillfully with them, or choose not to do things with them sometimes. So that's mindfulness of mental formations. So the thing to do here in this next 30-minute sit is certainly you still want to be aware of what's going on at the physical level. But see if you can start, based on what's arising, start to see how some things, you're grasping things or pushing things away or just spacing out. Oh, that's one of those three unwholesome mind states. You know, the three poisons are around. And not beat yourself up. Not judge yourself. But just sort of hang out with that. And notice that when you're not reactive to these things, they tend to go away a lot quicker. Like, don't feed the bear, you know. Just there they are, and it's like, okay, but I don't have to feed this. I don't have to sort of amplify it. And then you start to see that when you don't do that, when you can be less reactive, the energy, the story, the whatever, tends to go away, and the opposite wholesome mind state arises. And then be aware of that for the 5 seconds is there before the next one comes, because that's also going to happen, right? And just play with it that way. So that's mindfulness of mental formations. So now what I want to do is we're going to sit for half an hour, and then we can talk about what happens afterwards. So if you're listening to this as a recording, this is where I'm going to pause, and you're going to sit as long as you want to. We're going to sit for 30 minutes here. And then when you're finished doing your sitting practice, turn the recording back on, and there'll be some additional tidbits at that point, I'm sure. So let's just settle into our seats, make ourselves comfortable but alert and erect, and then just settle. Start with something simple. I unless you're feeling very clear and focused, I often think, especially after you've heard a talk, you need to let the mind settle a bit. And so you settle just by doing something simple like paying attention to the breath. Or maybe some people like to do something more like paying attention to the breath and hearing, not opening the door, but just a little bit. And that's interesting to experiment with. And then when you open wider, you can start paying attention to all the mental stuff that's arising. If it's predominant, remember, like everything else, there's lots of stuff that goes on at the mental level. It's like little tiny things in the background. And maybe the fact that you notice it, she's just much more predominant, and that's what you're noting. That's okay. Like, we don't have to make this like a project into, well, no, I gotta just pay attention to the mental stuff. We're just broadening our understanding of what's arising a little bit more. That's all. So let's just sit. So I have nothing more to say, I don't think, other than I want to read a poem at the end. So I want to open the floor to anything anyone would, any questions you have or anything you'd like to share about what happened in the last half hour, whatever comes up. So the floor is open, you just turn on your mic and start speaking. Don't, as always, don't feel obliged to say anything, of course. And of course, don't all speak at once. Victor, go ahead.
Hi, Barry. You know, sometimes I think during a session, you know, a sit, I find that my mind really hungers for a sense impression. And so, you know, I'll be listening and there'll be even a little like tinnitus, and I'll cap out the tinnitus, or a little bit of, you know, hot and cold feeling, and go on the feeling, and you know, I'll note it, but I know that I work a lot through the senses, you know, like a sense hunger. That's a distraction. Thoughts are okay, but well, I wonder what you think about that.
Well, we are senses, we are sensory beings.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with being able to note sense impressions, even like tinnitus or just like caught cold. But when you're, if you're actually craving them, then that's the mental formation of desire arising. And then that's what you note. Ah, not so much the sensation, but the desire for the sensation is what you note. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just, that's what's there now. So let's note that. It's not a, it's only a problem if you make it a problem.
Yeah.
And that's something we have to learn over and over and over again. Because we keep judging ourselves, like, oh, how come, what's wrong with me craving sensory input? No, so craving is resonant, then you notice the tinnitus and you note that, and then the craving comes again and you note that. Perfectly good practice is if what you're doing is noting it.
Yeah.
And then if you're judging yourself, note the judging. No, it's just another mental formation. Oh, now my old friend judgment is here. Isn't that interesting? Nothing wrong with it. It's just that's what's there now. So as long as you note it, as long as you're aware of it, is when it starts to turn into some long dialogue. What, oh me, I'm always some, there's so something wrong with me. I'm always craving sensory input. Nonsense. I'm a human being, and that's how human beings are. And so as long as I can be aware of it and see it, perfectly fine. But just note that energy around it, the judging energy, the craving energy. Note those things as well. They're just
Yeah,
things.
that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks.
Other thoughts, questions, comments?
This is more of an observation of my practice today than a question. But today I noticed a lot of the thoughts that came to me were more so things that I either forgot to do earlier or new things that I thought, oh, that would be a good thing to do, and spent a lot of time sitting with the like sort of the impatience or the impulse to want to get up and do those things while continuing to sit. So that was interesting today.
Yeah, planning and reviewing. Those are, and those can become notes. I mean, if there are patterns, so you can see the mental formation and the wanting, but then you also like see, oh, this is that planning energy or that planning mood, and note that. Note the mood of it in a sense can sometimes. Once again, it's like now I'm being more precise. I'm not just noting that I'm thinking. I'm noting that I'm planning, and how, and noting that I, and the desire to get up. Those are all things that can be noted. Just, they're just, there's nothing that's outside something we can note. There's not one thing that we can't note. That, and that's skillful if we know it. And the fact that you could see that happening is skillful.
Thank you.
So just before I read my little bit of poetry, I want to mention one other thing. So I said tonight this is the third foundation of mindfulness, and there's only four foundations. And we're just barely halfway through this whole thing, right? So what's left is the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And the fourth foundation of mindfulness is like all these different pieces of it. And each one, and I'm just sort of preparing you in a sense, each one of these things that we can look at and be mindful of in the fourth foundation of mindfulness are like, let's look at things from this angle. Or let's take this point of view and see what's there. So they're like ways we can sort of delve into what's arising in the mind by sort of categorizing things a little bit. And that categorization allows us to see certain aspects of what's going on and start to help us see more clearly. How everything is impermanent and changing, and how everything is just more and more sophisticated ways sometimes of creating a sense of a separate self, and how we can overcome that. And that's really what the whole fourth foundation of mindfulness is about. And we'll look at four different aspects of ways we can look at the mind and what's arising. That's the whole plan for the rest of the course. But I wanted to read this just because it seems very apropos to think. This is from Dana Fall's book, Go In and In. It's called The Fruits of Practice. It describes quite well, I think, what goes on in our mind these days when we practice. Despite fervent pleas for ease and safety, there are many days when reality doesn't quite line up with what I choose. Breakdown, letting go, surrendering even the illusion of control, breathing into the unknown. Sometimes that's what life holds. Practice hasn't brought an end to pain. I still increase my suffering like a fish caught on the line. My struggles only draw the hook in deeper. But being in reality is its own reward. It's the perfect paradox. The courage to stand and breathe when everything in me wants to flee is as great a gift as the freedom to seek retreat. No, practice hasn't brought an end to pain, but it has honed my willingness to experience the moment and sometimes see perfection unfolding in ways I wasn't big enough to plan, much less predict. Practice isn't about achieving a goal. It's not a means to pole vault over suffering. Practice is a way of looking life in the face and saying yes to all its disparate gifts. Practice keeps me awake when I would sleep and reminds me it's the journey unfolding in this very moment. It's the journey that reveals the truth and not the destination. Just pay attention. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere.